Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And I'm joined by Solomon Schmidt, who is out with a brand new biography. It's called Legal Gladiator, The Life of Alan Dershowitz. The book is available everywhere. And Solomon is also, he's written a lot of books out there. He has a series called History Bites. He has a YouTube channel where he puts educational videos out. But for right now, we're talking about his new biography of Alan Dershowitz. And Solomon, as we jump right into this, I guess I never thought of it over the years. I've known who Dershowitz was for most of my life, but never thought about there not being a biography. So how did it come about that you decided to write the biography? And then what do you do once you decide, I'm going to start writing this? Because this is a huge project.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Brian. So I turned to this project on Professor Dershowitz after 8 years of working on my series, History Bites. And what intrigued me right away about Dershowitz was just the hugeness, the scale of his career. You have almost 300 legal cases, including some of the most notorious legal cases that have changed our country's history, from O.J. Simpson to the Mike Tyson rape trial, to the Von Bulow case in the 80s, to Jeffrey Epstein and many other people, which, although these are very tragic human stories, from a legal standpoint, they pique people's curiosity. So you have Dershowitz having done all of these cases as a lawyer. Then you have him as a professor at Harvard Law School for 50 years, the youngest in Harvard's history. He teaches 10,000 students, including Ted Cruz, Elena Kagan, Natalie Portman, Jamie Raskin, and many others on both sides of the political aisle. Then you have his career as a Zionist, as someone who has advised Israeli prime ministers since Golda Meir up to Benjamin Netanyahu, and very controversially is extremely pro-Israel, probably the most famous Zionist in the world, or at least one of them, and other careers as well, best-selling author, 2 million books sold, almost 55 books written, a dozen languages, a prominent speaker. So just this overwhelmingly fascinating career. And then as I continued with my research early on, a couple questions drove me on. One was, how does a guy who is a punk teenager, a kid who got horrible grades in school, who was just a terror to his teachers, who faked his own suicide and horrible things like that. He mothers of girls in his neighborhood told them that Avi Dershowitz, that was his nickname, Avi Dershowitz is a boy with no future. Don't have anything to do with him. How does that kid, 60 years later, end up on the floor of the Senate representing a president in an impeachment trial? And as he's looking out on this sea of senators in front of him, he's looking out at some of his former students who sat at his feet at Harvard Law School. That was one question that drove me on. And then another question was, why does a man who, until very recently, is a Democrat, part of the Democratic Party, and Democratic, a classic Democrat in his political philosophy, why does that man defend President Trump, and especially knowing that he's going to be canceled for doing it, receive pushback from his family, his friends? I mean, Legal Gladiator, this book opens with a scene on the porch of the Chilmark General Store on Martha's Vineyard of Dershowitz getting shouted at by the comedian Larry David, a man who he'd been friends with for 25 years. He helped David's one kid get into college, and David would come over for dinner and use Dershowitz's home gym, and he's screaming at him, voice raised, veins bulging, face reddening, and that's how the book opens. So those were some of the things that made me fascinated to write on Professor Dershowitz, and what enabled me to get into it was thankfully, I was able to secure Professor Dershowitz's involvement through a mutual friend of ours, Harvey Silverglade, who's a civil liberties lawyer in Boston and one of Dershowitz's oldest friends, and one of his only friends who's a Democrat who stuck with him through the Trump years, through Dershowitz defending President Trump or his civil liberties very publicly. And so Professor Dershowitz took a chance on an 18-year-old author, which is what I was when I came to him. And he didn't look down on me. He believed in me. And we spent 2.5 years doing dozens and dozens of interviews. I saw him in New York City, Martha's Vineyard, Israel, Miami, and we had so many conversations over the phone, and he just opened up his world to me. I researched in his archives at Brooklyn College, where he has thousands of documents of legal memos and letters and diaries and calendars and all sorts of fascinating documents, some of which have not seen the light of day. And so that's kind of how I went about it. I hope that isn't too long of an answer to your question, Brian.
Well, it's Professor Dershowitz obviously participated with you. This wouldn't be considered an authorized biography, though, correct?
Well, you know what? It's an interesting word. I'm not exactly sure how that word is used. It was not authorized in the sense that he didn't control the narrative. And some people might find that hard to believe, but Dershowitz didn't read a single word of the book before it was published. But it was authorized in the sense of he contributed, and it wasn't done. It was done with his knowledge, and he gave me his approval to write it. So I'm not exactly sure if that would be considered quote unquote authorized.
The interviews that you were able to secure throughout this project are fascinating, from President Trump, O.J. Simpson, Bobby Kennedy Jr., and, I mean, it's just a slew of others. And so as you would do this, I would imagine it's like any other historian. You hear stories, and then some don't jive, and you have to kind of put it together as to what the real truth of it is when you put it down. Did that kind of work out as a process for you in this?
Absolutely, and I know that's a key question of writing history is, I was just having a conversation with a dear friend of mine about this yesterday. How do you decide what is true and what is false? Well, we know that some facts are more generally accepted than others. And then when there was a dispute, Brian, like take the Israel-Palestine controversy. I interviewed many times Dr. Noam Chomsky, who is a professor emeritus from MIT and a very prominent left-wing advocate and a very vocal critic of Israel. He and Dershowitz have sparred many times over the last 50 years. And so when I received information or interview content from both Dershowitz or Chomsky about their different controversies or questions related to the Israel-Palestine controversy, I tried to include both sides. What both men said, and then the fun thing, I hope readers will have an enjoyable time getting to decide for themselves what side they want to take, and you also get to experience that with this book, Legal Gladiator, in the sections dealing with Dershowitz's public disagreements with William Buckley, the prominent conservative, back in the 70s when they were debating free speech and the limits of free speech. Does it apply to communists? Does it apply to Nazis? And you get to hear these really brilliant, well-thought-out men dialogue about these topics and hopefully come to your own conclusions on who's right.
I'm chatting with Solomon Schmidt about his brand new biography, Legal Gladiator, The Life of Alan Dershowitz. Alan Dershowitz has been excoriated. It was really after he represented President Trump's constitutional rights in the first impeachment trial. And he always has a policy. He doesn't represent a client twice. But as you look at that, it seems like everybody loves their own lawyer, but they hate lawyers who don't, I don't know if it's live up to what their political beliefs are. But obviously there's a lot of hatred out there for Professor Dershowitz. Is that all politically based from what you found in your research?
Well, do you know, a lot of the dislike towards him that I have found is stemming from his very vocal defense of President Trump's constitutional and rights and civil liberties. Some of it has to do with his association with Jeffrey Epstein. There are people out there who call him all sorts of terrible epithets and just outrageous things, you know, child rapist and things like that, that are just, as far as all the facts indicate, just not true on any level, but those are hurled at him. So on some level, I think it's a part of the hatred for him comes from his representation of Jeffrey Epstein, and then another element of it is the President Trump defense. And do you know what's interesting, though, Brian? I found throughout studying Dershowitz's career, you see this theme of him taking on a very unpopular case and receiving pushback from it from various people in his life or members of the public. That's where I got the title Gladiator from. His willingness to go out in an arena with lots of people, you know, say, I don't like the word mob, but, you know, a mob shouting at him, trying to stop him, trying to shut him down, and he just goes out there and fights to the death. And so you see that with the O.J. Simpson case. He got booed at Celtics games, and his mother received death threats. But when it comes to President Trump, I'm not saying there's anything worse than your mother receiving a death threat, but when it comes to the President Trump case, the fascinating thing is not only was there pushback from the public, Dershowitz got pushback from his wife, from his children, from his brother, from his childhood friends, from virtually everyone in his life, and that's publicly available. You can read about that in the book, and I interviewed all those people I just mentioned. So that is what makes that his choice to represent President Trump on the floor of the Senate all the more intriguing, I think.
As you spoke to his former clients, like you say, you interviewed O.J. Simpson and President Trump are probably the two most famous nationwide clients. I'm sure you interviewed other clients. Did you find any clients that were not satisfied with Professor Dershowitz's representation of them?
That's an interesting question. No. And actually, you mentioned all those folks. Now, I know that some people have negative feelings about the late O.J. Simpson and President Trump, but they did speak highly of Professor Dershowitz, and folks can find their exclusive content in the book. Some other people that maybe folk your listener, or I don't know the makeup of your listeners, but I also spoke to Mike Tyson, Jim Baker, the televangelist from the 80s, and others, and they all had good things to say about Dershowitz. But of course, that makes sense, Brian, because Dershowitz helped them in a very, very hard time of their life. In some cases, where lots of people were turning against them. I mean, you take the Jim Baker case, Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, the televangelists from the 80s. Your listeners may recall that they had that PTL Club show. I wasn't old enough to see it, but I guess 13 million people watched that show every day. And when Jim Baker fell, it was a catastrophic fall, and he was sentenced to 45 years in prison on 24 counts of fraud. And Dershowitz entered the case and saved Jim Baker from a lifetime in prison. And that's one of the most, that's one of the greatest victories in his career, I think.
I was happy to see that you got to interview, as you say, the late O.J. Simpson before he passed away earlier this year. But as you sat down with him, I would think when you go into people who are essentially celebrity clients, you may have preconceived notions just from hearing them, although you didn't live through the O.J. case, so maybe not. But how did that mesh with you? How did you set aside any preconceived notions as a historian to write this?
Well, you know what? I just tried to come prepared to each interview. I have my list of questions for each interview carefully planned out. I have lots of questions planned out, and then depending on how much time the person will give me, I get through his the most important questions. And I try to be, and this is going to sound corny, but I really try to be black and white. I try to talk to everyone the same, no matter what personal baggage they may have, no matter what side of the political aisle they're on. I spoke to Jamie Raskin and Mike Huckabee and Stephen Breyer and Megyn Kelly, people on vastly different sides of the political aisle. But when it comes to, I will say this, Brian, and this is not a political comment, but the person, one of the people that shocked me, meaning surprised me a little, was President Trump. He was very, he can be portrayed in the media as very bullying, and I'm not trying to get into politics here, but he was very kind and gracious to me and sent me a letter after the interview thanking me for sending him some of my books. And although it was, you know, probably typed out by an assistant, it was personalized and hand signed, and one of the sentences was underlined. And I was really touched by that. And I was also touched by Jamie Raskin, who, when he and I would text back and forth, he would send me some kind messages, and Robert Kennedy Jr. too. It's really sad, Brian, to see these people who, when you take them away from politics, seem to be kind people, and then, you know, you get into the political ring and things get ugly. But I know that's an age-old story, and I don't mean to lock President Trump and Jamie Raskin together, but that's just my own 21-year-old American observation.
I know I've heard Professor Dershowitz say over the years that you cannot shut up President Trump. He loves to talk, and so I would think he would make a great interview for a book. Was that your experience?
Well, you know what, he did provide me some great content, but I got through all my questions with him. I had a liberal friend of mine who, when he found out I spoke to President Trump, he said, "Oh, I'll bet you he took the whole time. He took 40 minutes to answer one question." I mean, no, some of his answers were longer, but he helped me with all the content, and so did these other folks. And the interesting thing to me that stands out about these interviews, and I include content from all of these different folks on both sides of the political aisle in the epilogue. What stood out to me was that all of them took time to talk to a young author about Professor Dershowitz. All of these people, from Geraldo Rivera to Elliot Spitzer to Jared Kushner to Jay Sekulow to Ted Cruz to Mike Pompeo, and all the people I've mentioned before, and many others, felt it was important to take time out of their very busy schedules to share their thoughts and memories of Professor Dershowitz. And this is what I included in the epilogue. Every single one of them said a variation of this. Professor Dershowitz is an American icon because of his defense of the Constitution, because of him living and dying on the Sixth Amendment, which guarantees a rigorous legal defense to anyone, no matter how despised they were. And as I studied his life, and in his life story, when readers take a look at the book, you will journey with Professor Dershowitz to China, to the former Soviet Union. You will see the work he does for people in Romania under Ceausescu's regime and other countries with oppressive governments, where he takes on governments that have the opposite philosophy of our founding fathers, which is, we accuse you, you're guilty. Of course, we know it's the total opposite here in the United States, going right back to John Adams, who represented the British soldiers in the Boston Massacre trial, who shot into a crowd of colonists, and John Adams was on the side of the colonists, but he said, if we really believe in the concept of equal justice for all, these British soldiers deserve as much representation as us colonists do. And he took the case. John Adams took the case and defended those British soldiers, knowing it would cost him in his reputation and in his career ambitions. And Dershowitz is just a direct descendant of him, and that's, not to sound sycophantic, but that is, I think, one of his great legacies to our nation. And I hope he has many more years. He just hit his 86th birthday last week, and he has very good genes in his family. I spoke to two older relatives of his, one of his uncles and one of his aunts. His uncles passed on, but he lived to 98, and his aunt is still with us. Shirley, she's 96. I spoke to both of them, and their memories were just fascinating, especially his aunt. His aunt remembered what a terribly behaved young kid he was, and how Dershowitz's dear mother, Claire, would, oh my goodness, she'd say, oh my goodness, Shirley, I got to go to the principal's office again. Avi's giving them hell, you know, whatever she'd say. And so that was such a pleasure to speak with them.
Well, I can only imagine that your research materials alone for this book could fill a small legal library for the legal history you've recorded here. The book is Legal Gladiator, The Life of Alan Dershowitz. It's by Solomon Schmidt. The book is available everywhere, and it's a fantastic journey of one attorney professor's life representing all kinds of people. Solomon, I absolutely love the biography, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Thank you so much for your kind words. It's an honor to speak with you, Brian. All the best.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.